Adventures in Sci-Fi Publishing, Episode 83. Bringing you authors of science fiction and fantasy, publishing industry analysis, writing tips, book reviews, and the occasional belly laugh.
Well, buddy, you are gone.
Nice segue there, Sean.
It's Adventures in Sci-Fi Publishing. Oh, yeah, we're brilliant.
Yeah, if you need a really, really tall blonde person, I'm your woman.
This is Lou Andrews, editorial director of Pyre Books.
This is Tracy Hickman.
This is Sean Williams.
And now, your host. And welcome to another episode of Adventures in Sci-Fi Publishing, your podcast for science fiction and fantasy literature. My name is Sean Farrell, and I'm going solo again. Don't worry, folks. Sam's just out of town. This is always a busy time of year for her, but she'll be back in September, I promise. And I haven't forgotten all the voicemail and email. I'm holding on to it. Thank you for everyone who sent in the feedback. And when Sam gets here, it's much better to go through it when we're both here together because she's funny, you know, and I'm me. So anyway, I like having her there to go through things. Also, some people have voicemail and email directly to her by name, so she has to be here to answer it. But we promise we'll get those in soon. Today, I am joined by Matthew Rotundo and Jordan Lapp, who are both first place winners in the L. Ron Hubbard Presents Writers and Illustrators of the Future contest. If you've listened to the show for a year or more, you will have heard our past coverage from the Writers of the Future. Unfortunately, this year, I couldn't make the ceremonies. I've been there the last 3 years. It's very sad that I couldn't make it this year. But I was able to get Matthew and Jordan on the phone. Actually, I need to explain what happened. John Goodwin, president of Galaxy Press, set up an interview with me with all four first place winners. And my iRiver experienced a major case of epic fail. Boo, iRiver. And the interview was lost. So my apologies to Donald, my apologies to Emery, who were in that first interview, but I could not find them on the internets to hook them up with this second retry. I was able to find Matt and Jordan through their blogs. So my apologies to all of them for the trouble, and I do need to explain, though, to them, they're going to be listening to this, and they will expect to hear their voices on here, and it's not going to happen. So Don, Emery, I am sorry. And Emery, congratulations on winning the grand prize. Best of luck to both of you in the future. And hopefully we can get you on someday in the future. Now, what is Writers of the Future? You may not know. Well, Matthew and Jordan are going to explain all of that. They do a wonderful job explaining what the contest is and what you receive as a prize should you win. I will also be posting videos on AdventuresInSciFiPublishing.com. In fact, you can go there now and watch the book trailer that they put together for this year's issue. They always do an amazing book trailer, and this year was no exception, so come check that out. And I will link to the YouTube video of the awards ceremonies. So if you want to see what the fuss is about, you can come watch it on AdventuresInSciFiPublishing.com or just go to YouTube. But some past winners, I thought you may be interested in hearing this if you hadn't before. Some past winners of the contest include Sean Williams, Tobias Bakel, Steve Saville, Jay Lake, Ken Scholes, Katie Wentworth, David Farlan, you may know him as David Wolverton, Jason Stoddard, Patrick Rothfuss, Jim Hines, Stoney Compton, and Eric Flint, to name just a few. You can find all the winners at writersofthefuture.com. After the Writers of the Future interview, I have some special content from Comic-Con, courtesy of Lou Anders of Pyre Books. Couldn't make Comic-Con this year either, but Lou was kind enough to walk around with his iPhone and record some audio for us, so it's about time we get that on the show. Thank you for that, Lou. But without further ado, I'm going to go ahead, play the music out, and when I come back, I will be joined by Matthew and Jordan.
To write? Or have you always wanted to write, but decided that your job, your house, your family, your pets, your political affiliations, your volunteer work, your hobbies, your church, and that ache in your pinky you get on days ending in Y slow you down. Many professional writers have families. Many professional writers keep their day job. Many professional writers live their lives just like we do. Only they write, too. Like you should be doing. I Should Be Writing is the award-winning podcast that explores issues wannabe writers come up against every day. Everything from characterization to just the difficulty in getting on a writing schedule. And because I, your host, am a writer who's still learning, we do a rundown of my progress as well. This is not a do-as-I-say, not-as-I-do type of show. I'm there in the trenches with you. Visit ishouldbewriting.com to subscribe to this free podcast and download past episodes. Because you should be writing.
Hey, this is Bear McCreary, the composer for Sci-Fi Channel's Battlestar Galactica and Fox's Terminator, The Sarah Connor Chronicles. You're listening to Adventures in Sci-Fi Publishing.
Joining us now are two first-place winners from the Writers and Illustrators of the Future, Mr. Matthew Rotundo and Mr. Jordan Lapp. Welcome back to the show, guys.
Great to be
here.
Hi,
John. How are you, listeners?
Good. You know, I say welcome back, of course, because as the listeners don't know, we tried this once before and the iRiver gods failed. However, we will not let them deter us. So we do want to jump into this again. And this time, Matt, I was wondering if you could start us off by telling us and telling the listeners a little bit about what the Writers of the Future is.
Well, Writers of the Future is a contest that was established 25 years ago now. L. Ron Hubbard established it as his way of kind of what he saw it as a way of giving back to the field. You know, he had a pretty successful career writing pulp fiction, you know, back in the 40s and such, and then he kind of revived it a bit in the 80s and such. And so at that time he decided to establish this contest, and it's a totally free contest for amateur writers to enter, and it's judged by professionals in the field, judges like, say, Tim Powers and Sean Williams and Jerry Pornell and a lot of other prominent names in the field. Frederick Pohl was another one. They're all of the entries are blind judged, so there's no names on any of them. And the winners in each quarter get to attend this great week-long workshop and an award ceremony. And they also get a cash award and publication in an annual anthology. It's a really great opportunity for emerging writers. And about 15 years ago, they decided to add a contest for the illustrators as well. So now you have both the Writers of the Future and Illustrators of the Future contests kind of running in tandem. And it's a great thing.
One of the things I love about that is the writers all get to have their stories illustrated. So not only is it a first-time professional publication for most of you guys, but you get your first really professional-level illustration too, which is awesome.
Yeah, it's really cool, and they kind of liked to play that up a bit with us. They would not let us see the illustrations for the stories until toward the end of the week, and they had this kind of a little unveiling ceremony for all of us where they put up all of the artwork in a room, and they kept us out of the room until all the artwork was up, and then let us in to go see our artwork for the first time. And so that was pretty exciting. It was a lot of fun.
Cool. And Matt, how many times, have you submitted to the contest?
I submitted to the contest a total of 10 times before I won it. I used to joke that I had done everything but win the contest, actually, because I had been a quarterfinalist, I had been a semifinalist, I was even a finalist at one point, but I didn't win. And then finally, last year, I got the phone call telling me that I was a winner.
Jordan,
I kind of worked my way up the ladder there.
Yeah, I've done almost all of those steps. I haven't been a finalist yet, but I've been everything else. So hopefully I'll be joining you soon.
I'm sure you will.
Absolutely.
Jordan, can you tell us a little bit about where you were when you got the call?
That's actually an interesting story. There's a couple of different calls. Joni calls you when you're selected as one of the 8 finalists. And I was actually on the Mayan Riviera on my honeymoon. So it was almost exactly a year ago today, because today I'm in Whistler celebrating my one-year anniversary. So it's kind of a nice story.
Well, congratulations on that.
Thank you. Yeah, I got the call. She'd been trying to get a hold of me. My phone was in the hotel safe. I just got it out to check my messages. And my wife and I were heading down to the theater. And, I listened to my messages, stepped back into my hotel room, and screamed my brains out. It was so incredible. And then I did the same thing a month later when I got the call that I'd actually won from Joni, except this time I scared the heck out of my coworkers because it was in my office. So, yeah, I've entered 7 times. Matt's entered 10. It's nearly everybody that eventually wins this contest has entered multiple times. I know that there was a contestant that entered 22 times previously before winning. So it's a really big deal to finally get that call.
And just to put it in perspective for people who are unfamiliar with the contest, you can only enter 4 times a year. So when Matt says he's entered 10 times, that's 2.5 years. You entered it nearly 2 years every quarter. I assume it's every quarter. So that's a really long time, and it really shows the importance of persistence in winning this thing.
You know, your craft improves as you go along. Like, my first entry was an honorable mention, and if I go back and look at that now, you can really kind of see that improvement, and that's one of the really big benefits of the contest, I think. 10-15% of people who enter will get an honorable mention. And they don't tell you what the number of entries are per quarter, but I guess it's estimated at around 1,500 right now, although sometimes that's a shot in the dark. So about 150 people will get that honorable mention. And that's your first, for many people, that's your first real indication that you can do this thing. Right? You know, like, this isn't just a passion that you beat out whatever, you know, like 1,250 other people to get that honorable mention. So that's what the contest did for me. My first submission anywhere was an honorable mention, and that was a kind of yeah, you can do this thing moment for me.
No, that's great. I remember when Joni called me when I was an honorable mention, she started calling everyone and sending out like these little, not gift certificates, but these little what's the word I'm looking for? A certificate saying that you were an honorable mention in the Writers of the Future. And I have 2 of those. I keep meaning to frame them. So, I mean, it does mean something to get that. And that's cool you got it on your first one. Jordan, can you tell us what the week was like? They put you through a lot of events, and they offer a lot of things. Can you tell the listeners what you guys did?
Well, you know what? The week really is the real prize. Yeah, I think for my first place win, I got $1,000, and then you get an additional $500 for being published in the anthology. So that's not an insignificant amount for a fiction sale. But the workshop is by far the greater prize. They fly you in from wherever you are. They flew a couple people in from Wales this year. You land at the airport, they pick you up there. You're taken to a 5-star hotel, which they pay for. We stayed at the Hotel Roosevelt, which is just an amazing hotel. It's where the very first Academy Awards was held. So it's swanky.
That's awesome.
I know. And this is all on their dime. So, already you see that it's worth more than the prize money. Then, as the week progresses, you're given a workshop hosted by Tim Powers and Kitty Wentworth, both very accomplished authors on their own. I know that I've been a big fan of both of them for quite some time, so it was an honor for me to be in the workshop with them. But then you're also introduced to this cadre of extremely successful science fiction authors, like, you know, Rob Sawyer, Kevin J. Anderson, Steve Saville, Doug Beeson, Eric Catani. I mean, the list goes on, right? You know, like, I'm sure Matt's already mentioned a bunch of names, but it's meeting these people that's really incredible because, you know, I mean, I guess you've made your first professional sale. So they realize this, I guess, you know, like, I guess if you're at Writers of the Future, you're some of the hot new talent and they treat you that way. You know, it's a level of respect from these authors that you know, you've grown up your entire life admiring, right? And just, you know, you're one of the crowd, which is just an incredible feeling, you know, considering the company that you're in. So the week progresses, you set up for a bunch of interviews, like this one. We were also interviewed by Sirius XM, and they were doing a documentary on Pulp Fiction while we were there, so I did a quick interview for them as well. At the end of the week, you're set up for rehearsals for the award ceremony, which is on YouTube for last year and the year before, but they'll be putting our award ceremony on YouTube as well, so you can see what it looks like. It's, you get in there, and it's like the Academy Awards. The stage takes them 2 days to set up. There's an incredible book trailer of your book with your name that flashes by. Your illustrations are there. You've been introduced to your artist earlier on, like Matt was saying, and the illustrations are just top-notch. I guess as the contest gains popularity over the internet, more and more illustrators are entering. And every year it's like the competition has stepped up in an order of magnitude. I was lucky enough to be paired with Joshua J. Stewart, who, in my opinion, was definitely a contender for the grand prize. The grand prize among the illustrators was eventually won by Sasha. I'm sorry, I cannot pronounce her name. I'm not even going to try. She was the illustrator for Reflection of Memory, written by C.L. Holland. So the award ceremony is hosted by a bunch of top-notch presenters, people that are very successful in the field and who have been influenced by science fiction. And then the writers and illustrators are announced. And you go up on stage and you shake hands with these people, your heroes, who I was mentioning earlier. Rebecca Molesta was there. I think mine was Dave Wolverton. And the guy that won the Academy Award for Titanic, doing the special effects of Titanic. So these aren't small names. And you get up there and you give a speech, and they do ask you to thank L. Ron Hubbard, rightly so, because the contest, everything that comes, the contest is paid for out of his royalty sales. Mm-hmm. And literally, it's because he was a starving writer at the start, and he just wants to pay it forward. And then you're kind of whisked around to a bunch of book signings, like a five-star dinner, and then you're brought back to the hotel, and the week's over, and now we miss the hell out of it.
Yeah, we really do. There's one other thing I would add to that, and that's also that during the workshop, they do manage to get a story out of that as well, because we have the assignment of writing a story in 24 hours based on some prompts that we are given, and that was a very valuable experience. I thought anything that's going to get me some more fiction on paper, I think, is always very valuable, and I was pretty happy with the way that turned out.
You were pleased then with the story you turned out in 24 hours?
I was pleased with it, yeah. Now, other readers might feel differently, but it seemed to come together pretty well for me. I know that, people who are listening to this are thinking, writing a story in 24 hours, there's no way. Well, actually, you probably can do it. You just probably haven't been forced to. You haven't had your back against the wall and had to do it, but I think a lot of people would be surprised what they can do when they are pressed. And I felt that I could do it, and I felt pretty good when they finally put us on the clock and said, okay, now's the time, and you've got 24 hours. 24 hours from now, you turn in your story. And by the time we'd gotten to that point, I felt pretty good about what I was going to write about, and so I managed to get that done without too much trouble. I didn't have a really late night. I know some of the other writers did, and so it seemed to come together pretty fairly easily for me. But, I mean, easy being a relative term. I was pretty happy with it, and we will see what other readers think of it.
Of course, you guys were put on the clock, and then it was like, okay, Matt, Jordan, come here, you have to talk to the Sean guy. So you had even less time than the others did.
Yeah, we're not forgiving you for that anytime soon, Sean.
I think when I wanted to find out about a workshop description, we're kind of giving you the bare bones, but I looked at the workshop description written by Stephen Kotovich on his blog. He was a grand prize winner from 2 years ago.
He wrote a really good story, too.
I absolutely loved it. It was Saturn in G minor in volume 23. But I've been keeping a workshop blog on jordanlapp.com under the blog section. And I know that Gary Kloster, who is, I think, a second-place winner in quarter one, I think he's been starting a workshop description as well. So that information is out there.
Excellent. Guys, that was the best rundown of the contest in the week that's ever been done on the show, and I've been covering it for 3 years now. So thank you very much for that. I wish I could have been there this year to meet you guys. But the one thing that always blows me away is the quality of the award ceremony, and I'm going to put the videos up on adventuresinscifipublishing.com so people can come see how amazing this thing is. They really go all out on this thing.
Yeah, they really do, and it was a very impressive and a lot of fun for, you know, those of us who were being honored there. I was just thinking about this a bit, thinking about that award ceremony, and you know, they put so much into it, and it's really obvious that they are sinking a lot of time and money into putting on a professional and entertaining little show for everybody. You know, to the fact that we have to go in and rehearse a little bit, and they, you know, make sure that we're as prepared as we can be so that we don't do stupid things like, you know, you leave our award on the podium before we step away, or when we step away, or things like that, which I was just terrified I was going to do. But, you know, with all of that going on, it's real easy to get kind of caught up in all those details and worrying about, oh gosh, is my speech going to go over right? Am I going to flub that up? Or, you know, is something going to go wrong? You know, am I going to trip on my way up the steps, or, you know, something along those lines. And it's real easy to get caught up in all that and then not be in the moment and not really enjoy the fact that, hey, you know, this thing is partly for you. You know, it's a party being thrown in your honor, and it's a very nice one. So I was glad that by the time the award started, I was kind of in a good place mentally, and I could just be in the moment and sit there and enjoy all of this that was rolling out, knowing that nothing as nice as this is going to happen again.
Yeah.
You know, we were, as Jordan was saying, we've got to talk to, you know, Hugo and Nebula award-winning writers, and they have told us from their own experience, you know, they won Hugo's and Nebula's thing. They're not as nice as this. They're not as nice as this ceremony. So
the trophy is gorgeous, too.
Oh, yes, it is beautiful. You know, it was hard to part me from that. I mean, you had to pry that out of my fingers.
Well, guys, I'm curious, what are your goals for your writing as far as career or perhaps writing is just something more that you do for yourself? And in addition to that, how has winning this contest and having this experience this last week better prepared you to achieve your goals?
I'll let you go first, Jordan.
All right. Well, I spent, I think a lot of us spent a lot of time with Steve Saville while we were down there. And the guy.
Oh, I love Steve. He's the best.
Oh, he's amazing. Really a class act and an entertainer. Since the contest, he's produced 23 books. While he was down there, I think he got, you know, two more contracts for two more books. So, I mean, the man's a machine, right? And then there's Tim Powers, who produces a book every 4 years. And they're works of art, and obviously multiple award winner. And so you kind of see them on the opposite. I mean, Steve also wins awards. He won an award for best international tie-in. But they're really on opposite ends of the spectrum in terms of how much they produce. And you know, Steve was saying to me, I told him that after the contest, I wanted to produce a short story a week and kind of follow the G of Ake model. He said, No. Write a chapter a week. Get that novel out. Now is the time. And he was generous enough to suggest that if we finish novels, he made that offer to any of us, that we send it over to him. If he likes us, he'll introduce us to an editor or to an agent. Mm. So right now, I've switched. Now I'm writing a chapter a week because of that offer. I believe him when he says now is the time to take advantage.
Awesome. And how about you, Matt?
Well, as far as goals go, I've always wanted to be a writer, and I've always thought of myself as a novelist at heart. So I have no compunction whatsoever about making a career out of writing novels. I've written four to date. I'm working on a fifth right now. none of which I've been fortunate enough to sell, but they keep, I think they keep getting better, and I'm confident that one of these days I'm gonna manage to get an editor's interest with them. So, but as far as that goes, and with the contest, one of the great things about the contest and the workshop is that, you know, because since you're dealing so much with these professionals in the field, and there's already this assumption that, you know, if you've got it this far, you already kind of know the basics. You don't need too much schooling in the fundamentals. And we can focus on some more of the professional aspect of it, and particularly the novel writing side of it. I've been to writing workshops before, and most of them focus on short stories because that's a great teaching tool. That's a great learning experience. You learn a lot from writing short stories, and you can get a lot of the fundamentals mastered by practicing that. But as Jordan pointed out, and as Steve Saville has said, and pretty much anybody, any professional in the field is going to tell you, you're not going to make a living off short stories. And if you want any shot, you want any shot at all of making any kind of living in off your writing, you're going to have to write novels. And so there's a lot of talk about what's involved in that, and it's particularly from the professional side. You know what the market is like right now. You know, how to best approach getting an agent, or, you know, should you get an agent first, or should you go to an editor, you know, go to a publishing house directly and then see about landing an agent later. You know, Jerry Pournelle gave this this great talk to all of us about the realities of the marketplace. It was actually a rather, you could take it as a really downbeat, sort of depressing talk, because, you know, the hard fact is it's difficult out there. And, gosh, even before the economy went into the toilet, it was difficult in publishing. And, you know, there's actually very few writers in the community who can live full-time off their writing. And so, you know, Jerry Pournelle made that point in his own inimitable fashion. And it's good to know that. Even if it is sobering, it's good to be prepared for that and, you know, not have these pie-in-the-sky ideas that, you know, you're just going to get snapped up and instantly loved. Now, I've been writing for a lot of years. I probably already knew that. I mean, took 10 entries to get to this point in Writers of the Future, and, you know, many other short story submissions, and as I said, I've written 4 novels. So, yeah, I kind of already knew that I was not destined for instant success or anything like that. But nonetheless, all of that professional advice and guidance that you get, you know, some of it's just little things. Steve Saville had great little tips about, you know, when you're doing a signing and somebody wants to personalize it, what sorts of things maybe you could throw in there and how he approaches that. Little things like that. You know, he gave me some tips on my name. I think he thinks my name is too long. And that instead of having my byline be Matthew S. Rotundo, he thinks I should shorten it to Matt Rotundo because it'll be something that'll show up better on books. Hmm. Something I never would have thought of before he mentioned that to me. And I'm like, well, I got to take that under advisement. That's really good advice.
Interesting.
So that sort of stuff's invaluable.
I wonder what Steve would say to Chitra Banerjee Devakaruni. But anyway, she's a great writer. But anyway, you know, it's interesting that you're talking about more of a focus on novels, because Jordan, you spent the first half of the summer at Clarion West focusing on short story. So what was that juxtaposition like for you?
Well, you know what? Clarion West was really, really good to me. Clarion West, the object of Clarion West is to get you to writing to a professional level. And Writers of the Future is what to do when you're writing at a professional level. So I think Jay Lake made a very, very good analogy about what short story writing is like. And I think he confesses to repeating it from another source, but I can't remember that right now. It's the bathtub analogy. And you can imagine your writing career as being a soap-stained bathtub, and there's that soap ring and that soap ring means that's where you make a professional sale. And you start by filling your bathtub, and at the start, you've got, you know, a little bit of water at the bottom, and it's wavy water that not even the peaks kind of hit that soap ring, that professional sale soap ring. And so you fill it up by writing more, right? You get more of your words, you know, more of your million words out of the way. and it gets kind of more full, and eventually the very peak of your highest wave, you get a rogue wave that hits that soap line, and that's your first professional sound. But your average still isn't even close to that, right? So you got to keep writing, and you know, you keep writing, you fill your tub a little bit more, and soon the peak of every wave is hitting that pro line, right? And you keep writing, and then eventually even your troughs are above the pro writing level, right? So Clarion West, for me, was about, you know, filling my tub, right? It was about, you know, getting some more of my million words out. And I learned a lot from great writers like DJ Muir and Todd Vandermark and Emily Scofton, who I'm sure you guys will continue to... you'll be interviewing them, I think, one day very soon.
Awesome. That was great. Well, you know, you guys have been awesome. Thank you so much for coming back on the show. And I want to thank John Goodwin at Galaxy Press for helping to set up the first interview that we attempted during the week. Before I let you guys go, you guys gave some really great advice last time we spoke. And I don't know if you'll remember what you said, but I do want to ask you again, what advice do you have for new writers, aspiring writers, who perhaps even haven't entered this contest before and are considering it?
Well, my advice is always the same to anybody who's an aspiring writer. Never, 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 never give up. You talked earlier in the show, Sean, about the value of persistence, and you know you can't talk too much about that. You cannot put too much of a premium on the importance of persistence. It's not enough to be talented. You know, talent is important, it's essential, but talent alone is not going to get you anywhere. You've got to develop that level of craft, as Jordan was pointing out. And even once you develop that level of craft, you still have to consistently put your work out there, put yourself out there. Yes, definitely enter the contest. Enter it as often as you can until you are no longer eligible or until you win. And both of those are good things. If you're no longer eligible, that means you're publishing professional fiction. So
yeah.
Keep going. Like I say, I entered the contest 10 times before I won. I've got a short story that's going to be coming out here sometime this year that got accepted on its 25th submission. So I am... I like to say that there's a fine line between bone stubborn and stick stupid, and I crossed it about 5 years ago. So that's my advice. Never give up.
I think my advice is along the same lines as Matt's. Finish everything you write. You know, and I don't mean just, you know, write the last word, but rewrite it until it's done and then never touch it again and just submit it, you know, 25 times. If that's what it takes, but definitely finish everything you write. There have been I've known writers far, far more talented than me that have had less success because they haven't finished their work. No editor is going to buy something that's in your head. They want completed stories, and so you gotta get your work out there. You have to. Don't be afraid to submit. Don't be afraid of rejection. You know, if you get rejected, you know, six times in Writers of the Future, you might win on your seventh. Right? So keep polishing your craft. Hang out with writers who are better than you. You know, critters might be okay, but you know, like, there's a lot of people on there that you'll be better than. Find local writers, find people that, you know, that are on another level and follow in their footsteps and yeah. Learn from them. And don't go to writing.com, because writing.com, I don't think anybody above a certain level is on writing.com. So,
all right. Good advice, guys.
It. Thank you.
Hey, speaking of that, though, off of what Jordan just said, do you guys want to go get some coffee afterward? You know, hanging out with writers. I'll buy.
Anytime,
you know.
Sean. Anytime.
All right,
yeah,
Matthew.
We'll do lunch, brother. It's cool.
All right, there we go. That'll work. So one of us is in Canada, but big deal. I know, who cares?
Yeah, definitely. We'll just have to run that through customs.
Matthew Rotundo, Jordan Lapp, thank you very much, gentlemen.
Thanks,
Sean. Thank you, Sean.
When I think of fan fiction, I usually think, well, let's just say that quality is not the first thing I think of.
Codename Starkeeper blew me away.
Starkeeper brings back the magic of Star Wars.
It's a great story from somebody with more knowledge, love, and respect for the original trilogy than George Lucas himself.
The wide-eyed wonder that I felt when I first saw it as a very young child.
The characters are colorful and engaging.
The quality of the writing, production, and the acting are all top-notch.
The soaring excitement of when the Millennium Falcon first took off.
The action is gripping and the humor is spot-on.
I only have one problem. You're only producing 8 episodes.
This isn't just a worthy fan production. It's the best new Star Wars story to come along in years.
Codename Starkeeper is my favorite full cast fan fiction podcast.
Bravo to Indiana Jim and his entire cast. The Force is definitely strong with them.
Star Wars, codename Starkeeper. Winner of 6 Star Wars Fanworks Fan Audio Awards, including Best Audio Drama, Best Director Jim Perry, and Best Mixer Joe Harrison. Available now in all 8 episodes.
100% podcaster babble free.
At www.indianajim.net and StarWarsFanWorks.com.
Thank you again, Matthew and Jordan, for coming back on the show. And my apologies again to Donald and Emery. Best of luck to all of you. And if you are a writer and you have not been published professionally yet, and you're not submitting to the Writers of the Future, let me once again, as I've done this many times over the years on this show, strongly recommend that you do. You can find all the details at writersofthefuture.com. Okay, let's get to this special Comic-Con content. And by the way, we still need more of your Comic-Con content. We have a big picture there if you come on the website. You can click on that for the details. We want your stories of your Comic-Con experience. Did you have anything funny happen? What was the coolest thing you saw or someone unexpected that you were able to meet? We want to hear what you experienced. And if I sound a little nasally, I'm fighting a bug. I've had it for a week. Actually, I went to the doctor yesterday with my son, and the doctor said, well, there's a 50-50 chance you have the swine flu, but at this point, you've had it so long, there's really nothing I can do for you. So I was like, awesome. All right. I'm swimming with the pigs. But anyway, that's enough on me. Okay, here we are. Lou Anders at Comic-Con.
This is Lou Anders at San Diego Comic-Con to ask Christian Bernstein about Blam Venture's new Planet of the Apes illustrated novel. Christian, tell us about the project.
It's an exciting project. We got a 2-book deal to do. The first novel is Conspiracy of the Planet of the Apes, and it tells the story of what happened to the character of Landon, the only other astronaut to survive. We all know what kind of end he met because he got lobotomized at the end of the film, but we don't know what happened to him and how he got there. So basically, we start at the beginning of the movie. We devote a few chapters to what happened in the desert trek, you know, where they just have that 5-minute cut scene and they're just walking. Well, we tell you what happened and all the crazy stuff that went on there. Tensions kind of mount and things kind of build, and then, you know, the raid happens. They get split up, and from there, it's Landon's book, and we tell you what he went through, and we pretty much do a good job of tying all the things from the other movie in, characters that were minor in that movie, like Dr. Galen, who's the guy who had the septic bite. He's a major player in this. We also got Dr. Milo, who's from the third film. He Cornelius and Zira back to Earth, so he's another big player. We do a lot of my writing partner, Drew. He's a big continuity guy, and he's just tying all the loose ends together and making it really cool.
By the way, I've been swapping emails back and forth with Christian. He seems like a really cool guy. So I will definitely make sure to link to him and to this Planet of the Apes book. So if you're a Planet of the Apes fan, definitely check it out. Okay, enough from more from Lou. Here we go.
Wink, wink, expect to see it on shelves.
We're looking for a spring 2010 release. It'll be in all the major book chains and through the direct market as well.
And how is your first Comic-Con experience?
It's been pretty cool. I'm a little tired. It's really big. I haven't made it through everything, and since I'm leaving a day early, I probably won't. But I've been enjoying it, and hopefully I'll get to come back someday.
Great. I'm here with talking to Dave Seeley, whose artwork you've seen gracing the cover of the recent Luke Skywalker in the Shadows of Mindor. Dave, how's your convention going?
I love this place. I'm a fanboy first and a businessman second, and it's great for both. So I get a twofer, and that's why I love this place.
What are we going to see coming up from you in the future? Near future?
Oh, man. Trick question. Another couple of Bane jackets. Dominic Flandre, number 3. And a nice new tour jacket of a 3,000 years in this future of New York under destruction. Big fun.
And what's the best aspect of Comic-Con this time for you?
Hot girls. No. Excellent food. No, wait. Feeling an empathic connection to my mass of fellow men shuffling along, one immediately behind the other.
Yes, David, there are plenty of hot girls, the food sucks, and you often feel like cattle being shoved through. Yeah, I don't know what cattle get shoved through. But isn't the iPhone amazing? Listen to this audio. It's so good. I mean, you can hear all the commotion in the background, and that's because there is no such thing as a quiet place in Comic-Con. And the only way you can really get around that background noise is if you have some really fancy equipment. But I gotta say, I'm pretty impressed with the iRiver, and you can probably hear my kid in the background right now. With the iPhone. So one more piece here from Lou.
I am in the Friends of Ed booth with Michael Colbert, the writer of the hot comic book Crazy Mary from Digital Webbing Presents. Mike, how's your con been so far?
Con's been very good. Been very good. A lot of fun this year. It's enjoyable. Blazing drunk most of the time, but having fun.
Blazing drunk, tell me about Crazy Mary.
Crazy Mary is a cyberpunk-fueled action-adventure comic with supernatural overtones. So you have blazing supernatural science fiction action and horror combined together.
Who are the illustrators for it?
J.K. Woodward, who does Fallen Angel over at IDW, did the original cover art and the first two stories, and he's doing more in future issues. Gorgeous artwork, all painted. It's Alex Ross type of stuff.
Excellent. I've seen it. It's beautiful. Everybody look for it. Take care.
Thank you very much, Lou. I appreciate it. And folks, if you're ever going to be at a convention and you have something with you, like an iPhone or a digital recorder, and you want to record an interview with somebody, feel free to offer it to us. So, we don't pay or anything, but we would love to have you guys and gals contributing more to the podcast. I'm trying to come up with ways to do that. I think it's something we haven't done enough of. I feel bad about that. And I would like to get more listener content. So, do a 5, 10 minute, 20 minute interview, whatever you can get. And let us know. It'd be fun to play it here and get you on the show. All right, I'm going to wrap this up. Sounds like the kid needs some food out there. but my thanks again to Matthew and Jordan. Go buy the Writers of the Future volumes coming out in a few weeks. Thank you, Lou Anders. Appreciate it as always. And until next time, go read a good book, will you? Take care. Thank you for listening to Adventures in Sci-Fi Publishing. Please visit our website at adventuresinscifipublishing.com for online interviews, book reviews, news stories, coverage of live events, videos, and much more. You can send us an email at adventuresinscifipublishing@gmail.com and give us a call at 206-350-5029. Music by Cargo Cult from their track Dirt, available at magmatune.com. You've been listening to a Singularity Audio production. To learn more, please visit www.singularityaudio.com.